The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio with Dr. Alex Hubline and Dr. Josh Klapo. This is Adapt or Perish.
Welcome to Adapt or Perish. I'm Dr. Josh Klapo along with Dr. Alex Hubline, president of Adaptogen. Oh man, I've been waiting for this one. It is one of my favorite lyrics. I know it's one of your favorite bands. I have been trying to figure out how to weave this one in, and I love this line. If you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice. Alex, I use that with clients almost every day. It is such an iconic line from Rush, and you know the song Free Will is amazing because it sets us up for both freedom and this terrible situation of, do we make the big decision? Do we not make the big decision? What, I know Rush is one of your favorite bands. Go with it. What are your thoughts about the one? Because again, I love that line. I love that lyric.
Yeah, no, it's a great one, right? And you bring up the song Free Will. And it's tough, you know, whenever you're out there trying to make decisions, you know, there's always like this burden on you, right? Particularly if you're running a company or you're in a band or you're running an organization, you know, you feel like the weight of the world is on your shoulders. Wow, I've got to make this decision. And if I'm wrong about it, bad things are going to happen. If I'm right about it, great things are going to happen. I think it's tough. It's a high pressure kind of situation. And if you go look back through history, it's amazing some of the seemingly small decisions at the time that changed the course of history. You know, I was watching a documentary. I have this streaming service that's like all documentaries. And unfortunately, I've watched like almost all the ones I want to watch at this point. But, you know, there was this really interesting one, and it was about the history of the Roman Empire and the Carthaginian Empire back in like 200-something B.C., And a lot of people have heard of this great general Hannibal from Carthage, and he went up through the Alps and the mountains and came in from the north in Italy and just absolutely destroyed the Romans, destroyed the Roman army. They just couldn't stop this guy. He was a strategic and a tactical military genius. He invaded. And what's interesting is he finally defeated the vast majority of the Roman army. And he was, you know, he was within a stone's throw of being able to go sack the city of Rome. And had he done that, had he gone in there and sacked the city of Rome, the Western history as we know it would have changed dramatically. And they were kind of pointing out all the things that probably wouldn't have happened. You know, Christianity probably wouldn't have become a thing potentially, because that's kind of where it finally got its big, you know, push was in the Roman Empire a few hundred years later. And, you know, he's just talking about all of the interesting things that happened. But instead, he decided, you know what? My troops are tired. We've been through all these battles. We're going to kind of decamp to southern Italy. We're going to recharge and rest and so on and so forth, build some allies, and then we'll go back later and do it. And that one decision changed all of history, because as it turns out, Carthage, which was in North Africa, a fair ways away, while he was doing that, was under assault by one of the neighboring kingdoms or whatever. So the leaders called him back to Carthage, and he defended the city and so on and so forth. And what that did was it gave Rome time to go rebuild their army and their navy. And they ultimately went and sacked Carthage, a couple decades later. So you know, there's all these sort of turning points.
Wait, your PhD's in what? Yeah. Business administration and strategy, or is it history?
Maybe my minor was in history, right? But I love this stuff. Or you look at the music world, you know, the Beatles made a really fundamental decision back in 1960. They decided, you know what, we're in Liverpool. This isn't quite the scene we're looking for. So they packed up shop and they moved to of all places, Hamburg, Germany, and took some gigs at nightclubs there. And, you know, they were playing like, you know, multiple shows 7 days a week for a couple of years. And it's really, you know, a lot of people will tell you that that's really what made them the band they were. It was almost that crucible that kind of forged this amazing band, because they had to learn how to play really, really well together. They did it over and over and over again. They got to see other bands and other shows and so on and so forth to kind of expand their musical repertoire. But you just have to think, you know, if they hadn't done that, if they said, nah, Liverpool's comfortable, this is good, mm-hmm. we may never have heard of the Beatles. So I think there's all of these moments, and I think this is true in the music world, in the business world. You know, sometimes these small decisions can make all the difference, including, you know, to the point of this show, including the decision to not make any decision at all. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's tough, though. The real question that's always bothered me about this, and I've always thought about, is, you know, how do you know which decisions are going to end up being the really big ones in your life, or in your company's life, or in your band's life, and which decisions are just sort of the stuff of everyday life? You know, do I have a ham sandwich, or do I have a peanut butter sandwich Ooh, for lunch, or whatever? Right.
That's good.
That's hard, right? That's a tough, really, really tough question.
But could you venture to say that there are very few big decisions that you think are big decisions? What I mean by that is every decision is a decision, and every decision has an impact. And I guess maybe you come to these situations. Well, you all probably see this for sure in your business, you know. Should we invest resources maybe that we don't really have? That's a big decision, but that, you know, on any given day, you're making a gazillion micro decisions, which ultimately, much like the Beatles, in retrospect, become the big decision. And I guess I wonder if businesses put too much pressure on themselves to focus on, is this, whatever this is, going to make or break us? I don't know. Do you see that?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, everybody thinks they know what the big decisions are, right? And that's where they spend almost all of their time and effort, is in what they think the really big decisions are. And, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine a couple of years ago before COVID and before the pandemic started. You know, we were grilling in the backyard, grilling hamburgers or something. He was worried about something at work. And what I told him was, you know, man, in my life, the stuff that I've been the most worried about in my life, almost none of it ever happened. The things that have really gotten me in life were the things I never saw coming. Yeah. They were things that hit me out of left field, knocked me to the ground. And I was like, whoa, what happened here? Because I was looking at all this stuff that I thought was really important, that I thought were these big worries that I had in my life, or these big decisions I had in my life. And the stuff that's really almost knocked me out in life over the last 30 or 40 years has been stuff that I never saw coming. And so the question is, you know, kind of how do you not only see the bad things coming that you're not seeing, but then also, you know, how do you go out there and evaluate decisions and try to focus on the right things? And I think that's probably the toughest part. And you know, there's no magic answer. There's no formula for it. Because if there were, let's face it, you and I would have patented the formula and we'd be living on neighboring islands in the Caribbean, you know, and doing a radio show, counting all the money we've made and playing music. Right. So, yeah, it's a tough one. It's a really, really tough decision. But I think there's actually some ways of working through it.
So, yeah. So one of the things we do, one of the things I know I do with clients, and it's kind of a foundational sort of cognitive exercise. You see it in business all the time, but you also see it in people sort of who are worrying about decisions that they may have to make. It's called the what if, you know, so people get in this situation. What if we decided to go this direction or that direction? What if we don't invest? What if we don't move forward and hire 10 more people? And one of the things that we see, or I see, is the problem is if you don't answer that question to yourself or to your company, what if we don't invest? What's likely to happen? You don't carry it through. You're in this perpetual state of wonderment and like almost paralysis. And I think about the bands that you're talking about, you know, so the Beatles are great example. You know, what if we stay in Liverpool? Right now, it could have been, well, if we stay in Liverpool, we'll be comfortable and we'll be able to do this, you know, play the music we're playing, you know, or what if we go to Hamburg and what will happen there, and sort of talking your way through it, even though you don't know the ultimate outcome, but not leaving yourself in this position of at least hypothesizing what it might be, because if you don't do that, then you're just stuck. You're just stuck. And I think about bands who've evolved over time. Ones who have sort of
evolved. About to do Styx again, weren't you?
I know. I don't know what it is. But bands who've sort of evolved their music over time, they weren't, like you said, they probably weren't gigantic decisions. It's like, you know, let's add this line in there. I'll tell you what, let's pull back on the electric guitar. You know, let's put a new solo. You know, look, everybody's got a drum solo. Let's pull ours back a little bit. So there are these micro decisions. And even if the band was saying, you know, I don't know, Van Halen saying, all right, look, let's pull back on, and today's his birthday or would have been his birthday. Let's pull back on Eddie's, or I'm sorry, let's let Eddie go longer on the solo. You know, I don't know, you know, okay, we're going to open this thing up with an Eddie solo, we'll call it Eruption, you know, I don't know, I'm not sure, but sort of walking that through and saying, well, let's try it out. I kind of feel like that's the way we should be making our decisions in business. It doesn't have to be herky jerky. They can be sort of micro decisions. Again, your software company comes in to help people solve what I would think are big problems. Are you actually advising people, you know, look, you don't have to make these grand decisions. They can be incremental and still have an impact.
Yeah. And in fact, that's a lot of what we do, right? People have these grand visions of wanting to do these really, really big projects, these big lift and shift projects. And, you know, one of the things we're able to do for those companies is say, hey, you know what? Take a breath, man. You don't have to do it all at once. We've built some software that can help you do it over time at your own pace, but still reap a lot of the advantages that you're going to get in the long run. You can do it in the short term, and that gives you the time to go out there and make the right decisions on the timeline that's right for your company. And you know, what you just talked about was really what we call scenario planning in the business world, right? If this happens, then what are we going to do about it? And what should we do about it? And then it's kind of a feedback loop that ends up informing our current decision-making based on what could happen. And then we talk about what's most likely to happen. And it's almost like the reverse. I don't know if you've ever watched some of these, you know, again, I watch a lot of documentaries and I read a lot of books, but there's this whole genre of books and documentaries that are sort of these alternative histories. Like what would have happened had, you know, Hitler been hit by a bus when he was five or whatever it is, right? And so they kind of explore what would the world look like today if those things hadn't happened or had happened that didn't actually happen in the past. And I think that it's the same thing with the future. And you're really, instead of looking at alternative histories, you're looking at what I like to call alternative futures. What are the alternatives? What are the things that could happen? And then not only am I more prepared for those things if they do happen, but they also, again, have that feedback loop back into what my decision-making is today. And I think that lets you see the world from a much broader perspective. And, you know, we talked about that in our last episode, this idea of perception and broadening your perceptions and broadening your perspective on things. I think you can achieve that very well with this sort of scenario planning, alternative future exercises that you can go through.
Do you think, you know, when we look at companies that we're talking about they don't necessarily have to be publicly traded, but they're big companies that people know about, or big bands, you know, because there's a gazillion bands that we've never heard of because they haven't hit the radar, or they're, you know, sort of indie music and they don't have a mass following. I was thinking about this. Are there a million small decisions that are so impactful that when we stand back, we being the public, business owners, aspiring musicians, we don't see that. We're not knowledgeable about that. Right. Because we only see maybe the impact of it, or maybe the cumulative impact of it. And we're trying to emulate, you know, a successful business. We're trying to emulate a successful band without necessarily copying them. But they're making all these tiny decisions that, you know, they're not public. sentinel company changing in the moment. But do we have a tendency, as whether it's the business audience or the fans, that we miss that? You know, we don't see the, I don't know, again, I'm stuck on Van Halen. You know, Eddie changed the chord just a little bit, or he changed how fast he was playing, or they tweaked a little bit with the drums or the vocals. And we don't see that. We just know, oh, this sounds great.
Yeah.
I mean, is that possible that we have such a misperception because we only see the outcome?
Well, yeah, I think it's a lot about perception. And then I think it's also a lot about what, you know, the psychology community and the neuroscience community calls cognitive flexibility.
Ooh, I love that.
Yeah, well, I'm reading this book right now, and it's a really cool book. It's called Range, Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World.
Yes.
And you know, the book's all about, you know, this idea that in our modern society, we've all gotten very, very specialized in terms of what we do. And it's just true, particularly in big companies. You know, there's a high degree of specialization in big companies. You know, you have these very formal job descriptions, and it spells out this is what this role is going to do. And then we go hire people who are best suited to, you know, go out there and fulfill those objectives we've put in the job description. And you know, and there's nothing wrong with that, right? Every company has to have that. You just can't just start hiring people randomly and hoping for the best. But I think a big challenge that we see in the business world, and I think this is true of music or anything else, is that we don't look past just the surface skills and the surface experience. We don't look for, and we don't actively try to seek out people that have a high degree of cognitive flexibility, meaning that they can take something, a novel situation, and they can adapt to that situation without too much trouble. And, you know, in the book, it talks a lot about this idea that when you take experts, like true experts in a field, oftentimes they'll get worse the more experience they have. And the reason for that is mm-hmm. that when they're presented, they learn all these heuristics, they learn all these patterns of how to deal with situations. But the minute that you change the rules on them, even just a little bit, right? If you change the rules, you can take a chess grandmaster. And if you just changed one of the rules in chess, it just throws them off completely. They like have no idea how to play the game. Or you can take doctors that are good at diagnosing certain ailments. And if something new comes along, they actually have a lot more trouble adapting to the new circumstances than somebody who is lesser experienced. So I think in the business world, and again, this may be true in the business world.
That's risky. I mean, that's psychologically risky if you're a band, if you're a business, you're like, wait a minute, I want the best guitarist, right? We want a great guitarist. Yeah. You give someone, oh, well, this guy can play. Oh, we're going to come back. Look at Rush, right? Look at Rush. Look at the Police. These guys can look at the Eagles. Every one of them can sing, right? It's not just one lead singer or one. They're doing everything. I mean, are some of those musicians what you would call more, I don't know, cognitively flexible, but they're multi-talented. They can go any direction.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's go to the Rush example you used, right? So, you know, Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson formed a band. Their original drummer got sick and they needed to replace him. So they're interviewing.
It's always the drummer.
Well, you know, it's like the old joke about, you know, what do you call somebody that hangs out with musicians all the time? A drummer. but the point of the story is they started interviewing drummers, and Neil Peart showed up, and they just wanted a really, really good drummer. And so they thought, wow, this guy's he doesn't really look like us. He's not super cool, but man, he can play the drums really well. And, you know, it turns out he ended up being one of the best drummers of all time. But what they didn't do was look at what else he could do at the time. I think they kind of got lucky, because I think one of the things that's so endearing to fans about Rush is the lyrics to their mm-hmm. songs, right? It's not just the music. It's actually the lyrics that their drummer wrote almost every one of them, right? So they got this guy who was really, really cognitively flexible. They were just looking for a drummer. And I think they kind of lucked out that they got a guy who could also write some really amazing lyrics and really thought-provoking lyrics. And I think, you know, you see that in a lot of situations in the corporate world, right? We're just looking for this one specialty. We're just looking for somebody that can be a really killer accountant or whatever it is. And we don't put a priority in a lot of cases on finding people that are adaptable and have that cognitive flexibility. And I think that's what helps us, adapt to novel situations and to make decisions that are well-informed from a lot of different perspectives, right? And to help us identify, well, maybe this decision doesn't seem important, but this person's flexible enough from a cognitive standpoint to be able to give us a different perspective on things. And so I think that's one of the challenges we face in both the business world, the music world, whatever, is we don't do enough to kind of measure that up front when we're hiring people and to try to work out, you know, is this person an expert and that's all they're ever going to be? Or is this person somebody who's pretty good at what they do, but they have the flexibility to do just about anything and help us adapt as a company to whatever changing circumstances that we're going to see in the future? Because the world's moving faster and faster every day. And so that's kind of the whole point of the book is that, you know, people that are quote unquote generalists, people that can think flexibly, that can adapt to situations, they turn out in the long run, in a lot of cases, to be a lot more valuable than just having experts. The experts will get you where you need to be in the here and now, but they may not be able to get you to where you want to get to in the future because the future is unknown and we've got to adapt to it.
So, all right. So. Oh, this is so interesting. One of the things we know is that regardless of somebody's talents or expertise, rigidity often plays this really big role, right? So you can have a person who's very smart, very talented, and yet they're rigid, that decision-making for them is tough because it only exists within a certain realm, kind of the way you were saying. I mean, they may have the ability, the intellectual or the physical or whatever it is, ability to do all kinds of things, but taking them out of a narrow path makes them uncomfortable, right? And so that's a lot of things that we're testing. Yeah. A lot of things when I'm consulting with companies, it's how does this person respond to decision-making in general, you know, even if it's within their area, are they willing and easily able to make a variety of different decisions or take a right turn or a left turn? And now, so I'm thinking, I know you've brought this up in past shows. Sting is such a great example because here is a person, and it works with Rush too. It works with a lot of different bands. Here's a person who can not only do all kinds of things musically, but willing to do all kinds of things, willing to experiment. I'll give a contrast, and you see, maybe you argue with me, you know, until they switched lead singers. I mean, Van Halen wasn't sort of musically broad in their decision-making, right? They had their, you know, they had their bass, they had their lead singer. I mean, David Lee Roth did what he did. Eddie did what he did. They did what they did, and they did it great, but they really weren't taking in all different areas. And you contrast that with someone like Sting or a group like Rush, where it feels like you've got a lot more fluidity in terms of the people in the band and not only their ability, but their willingness to make decisions.
Well, yeah. And you know, you bring up a great point there because it's always struck me as odd that, you know, if you go back and look at the history of music, a lot of the great instrumentalists, people that were just amazing at playing their instruments, didn't actually turn out to be very good songwriters.
Right. Right?
I mean, like nobody would say, well, Sting was the best bass player of all time. Right. I mean, we all know he was. I mean, he's pretty good. But, you know, he wasn't like an instrumental virtuoso. Mm-hmm. But he had this cognitive flexibility to be able to write songs on a wide variety of topics and make them into popular music. And so that's always struck me as odd. You would think the people that are the best, quote unquote, musicians would also be the best songwriters and arrangers. And it turns out, you know, I just don't think that's true. I mean, there's obviously notable exceptions to that rule. But, you know, you look at a lot of super talented musicians, virtuosos at their instruments.
They don't write their songs.
They're not any good at writing songs. Right? And I think that we see a very similar analogy in the business world. right? We go hire experts who are just amazing at whatever it is they do, whether it's writing code or balancing the books or whatever it is. And we don't, we, and then we wonder why we're not succeeding. It's like, we've got all these super talented people. And you're like, yeah, but they can't think outside of their own little domain. And I think one of the keys to innovation and one of the keys to decision-making is being able to connect lines and curves and arcs of thought that don't necessarily intersect on their own and getting those things to intersect. I think that's where a lot of the breakthroughs come from, is people that can see things from a lot of different perspectives, these sort of quote unquote generalists, bring ideas together that just don't naturally belong together, or you wouldn't think they would naturally belong together, and kind of synthesize them into something that's truly innovative. And I would argue that's where the majority of innovation comes from, is looking at things from a very interdisciplinary way, as opposed to just focusing like a laser on one specific thing in a field.
Okay, but so if I'm a business and I'm hiring people, and I know you didn't say this exactly, but kind of the what I'm hearing, and I want to make sure we clarify this, is like, if I'm hiring people, you know, I'm sitting there going, okay, well, this is great. You know, I don't want to hire a bunch of generalists, right? Like I need my tech people. I need my CTO and my dev team to be amazing at what they do. And frankly, they don't have to know that much about strategy. Or for example, my chief marketing officer or my marketing team, I want to make sure they're awesome at marketing. I don't care how much they know about technology. I mean, are you going there, or are you going where at least my mind's going, which is they're willing to and able to think about those things. They don't have to be great at them, but they're willing to shift their mindset frequently and easily and think outside maybe their box versus the proverbial box. Is it more of that?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, it's like, do you want to hire a bunch of savants, or do you want to hire a bunch of people that can adapt and think and change direction quickly? And I don't think it's an either or decision. You know, I think you got to have a good mix, and it very much depends on the company, the size of the company, what stage the company's in, what industry you're in. Again, I don't think there's a simple formula for it. But I guess my point is that I think too many companies just kind of ignore the cognitive flexibility aspect of it, and they don't even include it in their hiring processes, and I think there's also this perception that intelligence and cognitive flexibility are like perfectly correlated. And I don't think they are. I mean, I think there may be some correlation between it, but, you know, I've hired experts in my life. I mean, really just world-class people, just absolute experts, and found, wow, these guys really have no ability whatsoever to think outside the box at all. They're really, really good at what they do. They're amazingly intelligent people. If you were to go measure their IQ, it's probably 150 or something, right? But just had almost no cognitive flexibility. And so, you know, I think you have to look at it from a balance perspective. When you're going out and hiring people within a business and building a culture, you know, you've got to have a culture that supports that idea of cognitive flexibility, but you've also got to hire the right people. And I think one of the most amazing things is, you know, and you can do this experiment for yourself, because we just, I took my leadership team on an offsite meeting back in December last month. And, you know, one of the things that I was really trying to emphasize to them was this idea of thinking outside the box. And so throughout the 2 days, we divided them up into teams, and then we interspersed all these lateral thinking challenges for them. And they would have 10 minutes to come up with whatever they thought the right solution to this lateral thinking puzzle was. And I was really surprised, because the very, very smartest people, or the people that I thought were the smartest people in the room, turned out to be the worst at the cognitive lateral thinking sort of puzzles. And the people that I thought, well, the other person's pretty smart, but they're maybe not as smart as this other team, actually turned out they just crushed them, right? They just absolutely crushed them. So I think we have this sort of perception that there's, you know, if you're really smart and really good at what you do, then you should have a certain level of cognitive flexibility. And I think that's maybe a bad assumption in a lot of cases.
Yeah. I mean, So again, you think about, when I think about the successful bands, we only get to see, I mean, maybe in retrospect, we get to see, if they're that successful, we get to see their history, right, over time. But really what you're talking about is a willingness to balance. We want to do something great, or we want to do our craft, or we want to make great music, but we're willing to, I'm thinking of the Beatles again, that period where they were completely, and again, they had already reached this level, but they were experimenting with a variety of instruments, and I'm blanking on the instruments, but sort of these ancient
sitars and stuff. Yes. And, yeah, right.
Yeah. I mean, this idea that we're going to make some decisions. We're going to run, you know, in my field, we're talking about as mini experiments, right? And listen, if a very often people don't even want to do that. They don't want to do the mini experiments because the mini experiments forces them to test out small decisions. And a lot of times they balance it by saying, well, we are who we are. You know, this is who I am, and this is where my focus is. And I, you know, I'm perseverating on this today, but I go back to, you know, David Lee Roth versus Sammy Hagar versus maybe Rush and the Police. Very different approaches. I mean, all successful, but, you know, I would argue probably very different cognitive flexibility there. What are your closing thoughts? Because I know we're coming up on the end of this show.
Yeah, well, you know, and again, I think you're right. I mean, I think there's different approaches to it. And I think people, a lot of times, going back to the original title of this episode, you know, if you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice. You know, there's this idea of deciding to take no action at all. And I think that's an underappreciated skill that you see in a lot of bands, and you also a lot of companies. So there's this idea, and it goes back to our last episode about sort of this visionary idea. You know, everybody wants to be the first mover when something happens, right? Because they think that there's this big first mover advantage. And I think the reality is, if you go look at the really successful companies out there, they weren't always the ones that came up with the idea in the first place. They were what we call fast followers. They just did it better than the people that originally had the idea. And I think that's there's a lot of truth to that in music. I think there's a huge amount of truth of that in the corporate world. You don't have to be the first mover. You don't necessarily have to be the company that goes out there and makes the decision to jump right into something. Sometimes it's actually valuable just to kind of wait and see what's going to happen a little bit in the marketplace and then jump in at the right time. You know, we talked about timing a lot on this show. Finding the right time to jump into something is absolutely critical from a decision-making standpoint. So I think you've got to take that into account that, you know, first mover advantage, yeah, it can be really helpful for some companies, but sometimes it's actually good to just stand pat and say, we're going to see how this new trend works out for a few months. And then if we feel like it's the right thing to do, we're going to jump in, and we're going to jump in a big way. And that, I think, is some of the discipline you have to have when it comes to decision making. But it requires another type of cognitive flexibility, because nobody wants to feel like they're just sitting still. But sometimes that's actually the best answer, at least for a little while.
Yeah, well, because you got the free will to be able to do that. You get to make the decision or not. Another great show. We're out of time, but we're going to be back again. So thank you for joining us for this edition of Adaptive Parish. All you need to do is stay tuned to Tony Curry Radio, and you will catch us for the next episode of Adapt or Perish.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.